unpopular vote goes against you. So the point is that a father is able to teach a child on a certain intellectual level. When a child reaches a certain rational age, to teach a child, let's say 4 or 5, I don't know when that is. I know my own grandchildren. I have, my daughter has twins. So they're little babies. My wife says, oh, do you want to hold twins? Yeah, okay, I'll hold a twin. Hold a twin. Oh, cute, yeah. 10 seconds later, you can have her back. Whereas the women say, oh, can I hold them? And, they hold them. There's a whole different relationship to children between men and women. And a man is able to teach on a certain level. Women are able to teach children, but on not only an intellectual level, but on a spiritual, emotional, experiential, cognitive, many different levels. My grandchildren, I have grandchildren that are 2 or 3 years old. These kids are packed with Torah. Packed, you press a button and you get a song about anything. They're full. And believe me, this is something that, I'm not saying it's impossible for a man physically to do this, but it's not natural for a man to do this. This is what women do. So it says, Shema b'ni Musa Rabicha. Listen, my son, to the father, because when it comes to the father, you have the choice, listen or not listen, because when he teaches you, you are already at a certain level of rationality. But you can't tell a person, Shema b'ni Torah Simecha, because by the time you come to the point where you could decide if you're going to listen or not listen, she's done her job. You've been packed. You're full. So your options are titosh and not titosh. Will you exchange it for something else? I'll titosh. Don't exchange it. But the Torah Simecha comes much earlier and is much deeper, and that's really what makes a person Jewish through and through. The memory that's passed down from generation to generation is much more the work of the mother than is the work of the father. The babies, the little children, the 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds remember the Tzias Mitzrayim. They remember it. They remember it because they are connected to the collective memory. They remember Tzias Mitzrayim. They remember Har Sinai. And that is something that the mothers accomplish much more than the fathers. Yeah, when they get older, they learn Gemara. The father learns Gemara. Yeah, that's good. It's very important. It's very good. But it's the mother that has the main job. Now, Everything in Judaism that's a privilege is also an obligation. If a kohen has a privilege of going up to the front and being saying Birchas Kohanim, which is a beautiful thing, but what if one day he decides, guys, I'm not in the mood today, you guys go up, I'll stay here with the Israelites. Doesn't have that option, because if you have that privilege, you have that obligation. Privileges and obligations in Judaism are two sides of the same coin. If you have a privilege, you have an obligation. And therefore, when it comes to issues, I'm not going to talk about mechitza, or these are tznius issues, or kedusha issues, these are different issues. But if it comes like being part of the minyan, or going to any of these things that women see as privileges, they're also obligations. If you have the privilege of being part of the minyan, of going up to the Torah, then you have an obligation to be there every day and to be there every Shabbos, rain or shine, unless you have high fever. And if you have that obligation, so if the women would have that privilege, they would also have the obligation. And that obligation would interfere with their higher obligation of creating Jews that are Jews to the core. And that is something the Torah does not do. I lost my father almost 2 years ago. He was nifter on a Friday night. And I escorted the Aron to Eretz Yisrael. The Alvaya was on Sunday, the Kfura was on Monday in Eretz Yisrael. I was the Aynan. Aynan means that until he's buried, you do nothing. No mitzvahs, no brachas, no nothing. And I'm sitting on the plane, flying over the Atlantic Ocean, and my tefillin are up in the cubby, and people are going to the back, and they're saying, we're going to make a Davin Shacharit. You want to come? You coming? Put it in. I said, no, I can't come because I'm an Aynan. And I think to myself, why? Well, I don't understand something. An Aynan is not supposed to do anything because he should be punished for the tzrachim of the mess. He should be free to take care of anything that the deceased needs. To be available. Don't do anything else. Be available for the mess. I'm sitting in an airplane, 30,000 feet over the Atlantic Ocean. The coffin is in the hold. There's nothing I can do for the next 7 hours. Why in my whole life I never missed a day of tefillin? Why cannot I take out those tefillin and put on those tefillin? What is the problem? And that's when it really dawned on me that the derech of the Torah, the way of the Torah, is that There's certain times the Torah does not give you, does not put you in a position of making choices. Now you see, so Torah says no is no. Doesn't mean that in this situation, yeah, this situation not. Yeah, that's not the way. The derech of the Torah is if you have a person, a close relative that just died and not buried yet, then you are free and available, and it doesn't matter if you can work it out, you are no tefillin. No tefillin for you, no brachas for you, nothing. And that is the same thing with women. If women, they can say, well, I'm a teenager, I'm not married yet, I'm older already, I don't have children, my children are married, I have 17 maids. That's not the way. That's not the way. The Torah does not put you in a position where you have to make choices and value judgments and decide, okay, which of my obligations should I do, which of my obligations shouldn't do. If you have an overriding obligation to bring up those children and to do with those children what only a woman can do, what only a mother can do, and make them Jewish through and through, then that is your most important obligation, and we will not give you a mitzvah asay that in any way can interfere with this, and you have no other obligations and that will possibly interfere with this, and you don't have to decide, and you don't have to make any value judgments. That is now. Okay, I'm going to steal 5 more minutes. No, 2 more minutes, okay. So, considering the idea of the memory, that memory being the essence of Judaism, the essence of Judaism. So, it's not just the concepts, it's the memory of Jewish Shechina, the memory of revelation, the memory of a real covenant between God and the Jewish people. That is Judaism. It doesn't mean we have to be kind to other people. It's that, you know, that's not what Judaism is. Judaism is the memory of an incredible historic event, and that there is a covenant between God and the Jewish people. So when you have streams of Judaism, of Jewish people who deny the covenant, who deny revelation, that is out of the pale. You can't. Judaism is a big umbrella. We can have Lubavitchers and Hasidim and Misnagdim and modern Orthodox and ultra Orthodox and medium Orthodox and Sephardim and all kinds of shapes. But as long as you believe in Torah ben Hashemayim, as long as you connect and you preserve and you carry forward the memory of Maimar HaSinai, then you go under the umbrella of Judaism. If you don't, then you step out of the umbrella. The success of Orthodoxy in the post-war generation, success of classical Orthodoxy and modern Orthodoxy, was only because of the clarity of the message. Because there's you draw a line in the sand and you say, you can't step over that line. If you step over that line, you're out of the pale. And that is what gave us that tremendous strength and the ability to regenerate and to rise out of the ashes. If you blur that line, then you see, there was a feeling of Avat Yisrael, reach out to other people, and it's extremely important. It is critical. But if because of Avat Yisrael, you're going to have pluralistic meetings with Reform rabbis, which creates the impression that these Reform rabbis are also rabbis of a sort and also represent a brand of Judaism, then you have muddled Judaism for your own children, and you've undermined yourself. And at the end, not only won't you accomplish with them, you won't accomplish with yourself. It's very important to reach out to them. We have to find ways to reach out to them, but absolutely not by in any way recognizing and validating the Reform Rabbinate. I think that modern Orthodoxy, now wherever I travel, I present a certain idea, and I'd like to present that here as well. The way, we have to reach out to those people, we must. And the way to do it is lay people to lay people. We have to create groups of let's say a once a week study session. We have 30 people from Orthodox and 30 people from non-Orthodox. You get together, you learn Torah. That's the way. You learn Torah, Torah will bring them back. But circumvent the rabbis. No Orthodox rabbis, no Reform rabbis. Keep the rabbis out. Don't do it in an Orthodox shul. Don't do it in a Reform shul. Do it in a private home. But do it on a mass scale. And Reform, modern Orthodox is uniquely suited to do this. Because the people have contact with non-Orthodox Jews, and people can relate to them, and not only would it be a tremendous benefit and bring thousands and tens of thousands of people back to Judaism, but it would be a tremendous chizuk for the modern Orthodox world itself. It would raise the level of Torah learning, and every lay person, all just about, is a tremendous resource. Learn chumash with people, learn siddur with people, take the people and sit down with them and learn something. But only lay to lay. Avoid the rabbi. Excuse me, Rabbi. Well, I was like rabbis, I'm sorry, but we need to circumvent you. We need to go straight to the people. And I think that if we did that type of a thing, I think we could have tremendous success. Time is short, and we have to do it right now. Thank you very much. I
want to thank. Can you hear me? I just want to thank you, Rabbi Reinman.
So really, I didn't want to answer questions, so that's why I just kept going.
We're going to have some questions, and I'm sure there's a lot of questions. I just want to start. At the end of your presentation, you seem to understand the need for a dialogue between Reform and Orthodox on some level. In the beginning of your presentation, it seems
I didn't say dialogue with Reform. I think we need to learn Torah together.
Okay, learning Torah together. In the beginning, also, it would seem that in the Rabbi Solomon, Rabbi Kamenetsky, and many others feel that there was a need, and it was done in a way which was a book form between two rabbis. The question that occurred to me while you were talking was, who's really running the show, in a sense, in deciding what's going on with rabbis? Is it Rabbi Kamenetsky? Is it Rabbi Solomon? Or are it the people who are pressuring? Is it the Jewish press and the media and the average person in Lakewood or New York who's deciding the future of how this interplay between Reform and Orthodox go on?
There's nobody that has it. We don't have a pope. Nobody has the final authority. But I think that the controversy, they express their opinion. I think that the controversy and the book worked together. The book gave out the message, and the controversy slammed the door behind the book. And I think that's very good. It's very important. I think pluralism is a very, very dangerous thing. I think it can do far more damage than good, and I'm against it. But what I did was, it looks like pluralism, it smells like pluralism, but it's not. And we had a loophole. We never intended to say that you could have any kind of dialogue. Especially, as Dr. Milano pointed out to me, the dialogue means that you don't only talk, but you also listen. And in the book, Ami explained to me a number of times that I didn't give an inch. Because I'm not interested in learning from him. I'm not, what's he going to teach me? I mean, where's it coming from? And I mean, he can teach me many things. He can teach me math. He can teach me chemistry. But is he going to teach me about Judaism? He can teach me about Judaism. I have learned Judaism from a Reform rabbi. I learned Judaism from the Gemara, from Shulchan Aruch, from all the farms that we have. I don't believe in that at all.
We can entertain questions from the audience. Just request you come up. You can just come up if you want. Just request that people do ask questions rather than give any type of long speech.
25 words or less.
I'm just wondering why watching The Sopranos is better than learning Talmud with a Reform rabbi.
Okay, that's a good question. Let me ask you something. If your child was learning in school, and he or she would ask you, should I go to learn math with somebody that's going to teach me that 2 plus 2 is 7, or should I watch TV? What would you say? Well, if it's within the level of tolerance, what would you say? Take TV, exactly. That's what you're going to learn. If you read through the book and you see what these people do with the Talmud, how they distort it and how they misrepresent it, the worst thing you could do is learn Talmud with them. You get total sheker. Everything's falsity. And you pin them to the wall. They have nothing to say. They take this thing out of context, this out of context, misrepresent everything, and this is Talmud? This is Talmud? Watch The Sopranos. I don't know how bad The Sopranos is, but as bad as it could be, it's better than this.
I think I hear with clarity there's a difference between authentic Judaism and authentic Jews. My question to you is, when you mingle these two flocks of people, and you're choosing to do the lay, without leadership, aren't you afraid of this?
I'm afraid of loss
and some gain?
No, I'm not afraid. It means that you're going to have these groups learning together. If they sit together and learn Torah, I'm assuming that the Orthodox people are ahead. Orthodox people are learned. They're learned. Compared to that, the non-Orthodox are generally ignorant. If they're going to sit and learn Torah, I'm not worried. I mean, assuming that they're going to still keep going to shul, you feel that there's a danger? I mean, is the danger is just in having contact with non-Orthodox people or in learning Torah with them?
I think ideology is as strong as the person delivering sometimes. And if they're malleable from either group,
I'm not saying you should get together. I'm not saying you should get together to learn to discuss ideology. Get together to learn Kitzur Shulchan Aruch.
Well,
that's the way it is. That's Kiruv. What is Kiruv? People going out there learning with non-from people. So are all Kiruv people at risk? I don't really think so.
Sending two groups of that leadership together.
Okay.
The risk.
Okay.
You said that the mandate, or the most important way that the Jewish woman contributes, is the teaching of the Torah on an emotional and spiritual level to the children at an early age. But where is it stated in the Torah that that's the Jewish woman's mandate? Because a woman is not obligated to get married. She's not commanded that she has to get married.
That's true.
Whereas on the man, and also Peru Avu is on the man. So therefore, it's not stated clearly that this is her mandate. So how can, and why, so why isn't it? If everything else is she's not obligated to, precisely to free her for this, then why doesn't the Torah obligate her in this?
Why does the Torah obligate her to take care of the home?
No, to have that she's, that is a mitzvah for her to get married. It's a mitzvah for her to have children. And also it's a mitzvah for her, and she's not even commanded to have anything to do with the education of the children. So if it's,
well,
her most important role is not formalized in any way in terms of a mitzvah from the Torah. So how do you resolve this?
That's a good question. I mean, it's a very good question. I don't know exactly why the Torah doesn't, force the woman to marry, you're saying. Why the Torah doesn't demand of her. But the fact is, though, collectively, the individual woman, you're right, if an individual woman decides that she doesn't want to get married, she doesn't want a family, she wants to go out and become a doctor and not be married, there's nothing saying that she can't do that. She can do that. But the future of the Jewish people, collectively, is built on the collective contribution of the women. Why the Torah doesn't make it an individual obligation, I don't know. I have to think about it. It's a very good question. But the fact is that we are here because of our mothers, not because of our fathers, through all the generations. Okay, so you're asking a very good question. I don't have the answer at this point.
First of all, I want to thank you for being courageous enough to publish your book. And second of all,
you're welcome.
A point of information, and I think you were correct that outreach to members of other groups, not denominations, can't be done within a synagogue. It's my understanding, by the way, that Rav Noach Weinberg advises members of Aish that they have no affiliation in rabbinical organizations for that reason, that they stand as independents. Kind of mechut l'machle, they neither represent orthodoxy nor non-orthodoxy, but simply represent Kiev.
Which is again a kind of a loophole because of
and a lot of good programming takes place outside organized most Stoughton places. My question to you really was, and it's a restatement of what Rabbi Curzon said before. You seem to have lined up, forgive the expression, all your ducks beforehand. You went into this. You spoke about Matas Yo, Solomon. You've got a shtempel from Shmuel Kamenetsky. You spoke of Noach Weinberg. You know, all the greats, so to speak, or some of the greats are lined up on your side. And yet, when the Moetzet Torah came down upon you, you simply felt that you needed to respond personally. Why don't you simply say, as that anonymous Rav said to you, you know, hang it on Rav Matas Yo. Say, well, they already gave me the Haskama. They supported this. Ma achnis atmi ben Rashi Harim. Why did you seem to feel that you needed to respond rather than simply say, I already got my Haskama. I've been given direction, and therefore I'm relying upon what is Das Torah, to use the expression that the Haredi world would use. I have my support, and, you know, go speak to them.
You know, there's the Rabbin and there's the Yochid. There's the majority view and the minority view. In this case, it seemed that the majority view was against it, and the minority view, including Rav Matas Yo Solomon and including Rav Kamenetsky, at least publicly, deferred to the majority. And I asked Rabbi Shechter about this afterwards. I went to meet him. I know him. I mean, he was my menial when I was in Chaim Berlin. And I asked him, why can't you have a Das Yochid? Why do you have to insist that the Das Yochid? So he told me, I'm not going to get into it here because it takes a lot of time. He told me a very interesting story about Rav Huttner. And he said that as issues of this sort, which are critical communal issues, then the feeling is that it's important to present a united front. And that if you have a Das Yochid which disagrees with the Rabbim, it's important that the Yochid defer to the Rabbim and stand in solidarity with them. They deferred to the Rabbim, the people that supported me deferred to the Rabbim, and I do as well. And that doesn't mean that I agree with the Rabbim, and doesn't mean that I say it's not for me to agree or disagree, but it doesn't mean that I agree with it, but it means that This is the position, and we don't break ranks, because this is a critical issue, and it's the whole future of the Jewish people depends on this. Not only the non-Orthodox, but the Orthodox as well, because if that barrier is broken, what's going to happen to the Orthodox world? So this is a very, very critical issue, and I'm very much in favor of this barrier. I'm telling you a very... Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry not to bring back the Soprano issue, but I'm concerned that we have an enormous opportunity for the Reform movement to be our future Balshuvas, and therefore perhaps it is better for them to get a diluted, slightly distorted form of Judaism so that they can continue to question and question and question.
In other words,
like Reform Jews who are questioning and learning Torah perhaps in an inauthentic way have a possibility for thinking and rethinking and asking and perhaps coming to Orthodox Judaism.
You mean they should learn with the Reform Rabbi instead of watching the Sopranos?
Only because the Sopranos, they'll never get
the
Orthodox Gemara
says,
Judaism.
Shabesh tokiv v'dol ol. Once you learn something wrong, it's lodged in your mind. We don't teach Sheker. We don't teach the Talmud in a false way. We don't teach the Torah in a false way. You have to present the people with the truth, and they'll deal with it. And I want you to know, these people they're thirsting for it. I mean, all these emails, I got 150 emails. Most of them are from non-Orthodox
right.
Jews.
This is the group we
they want. You don't have to pander. You don't have to give them diluted things.
No.
You can give them truth. You don't have to give them in major doses. Give them truth.
Right. No, but their opportunity to learn truth comes from that diluted
give them
baseline.
Talent to pull them to the truth, and then give them truth. Don't give them sheker.
I want to thank you very much, Rabbi Reinman.
You're very welcome.
And everyone, if everyone could please stay in the shul, because in a few minutes is going to in a 5-minute break, and the Rabbi Lamb is going to be speaking in the shul. So please make sure you stay in the shul.